When it comes to weight loss, no two people are the same. That's why Noom builds personalized plans based on your unique psychology and biology. Take Brittany. After years of unsustainable diets, Noom helped her lose 20 pounds and keep it off.
I was definitely in a yo-yo cycle for years of just losing weight, gaining weight, and it was exhausting.
And Stephanie. She's a former D1 athlete who knew she couldn't out-train her diet, and she lost 38 pounds.
My relationship to food before Noom was never consistent.
And Evan, he can't stand salads, but he still lost 50 pounds with Noom.
I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. Even through the pickiness, Noom taught me that building better habits builds a healthier lifestyle. I'm not doing this to get to a number. I'm doing this to feel better.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom users compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now, let's get on with the show.
At one point or another, we all deal with pain, with grief, or with suffering of some sort. Maybe it's a physical pain from an accident or a disease. It could be an emotional pain from the loss of a loved one, or a betrayal of a friend, or something different like that. Maybe for you, there's a social injustice that you're facing. You might also feel pain in the form of empathy for others who are suffering. Mothers endure the pain of childbirth, and athletes endure the pain of their training to compete at the best of their ability. So pain isn't really all that bad. One thing that we need to remind ourselves is that the pain or suffering that we're going through can help bring perspective to our lives. Pain and suffering has a way of humbling us. What I don't mean by the word humble is someone who thinks that they suck or is always down on themselves. Someone with no backbone. That's not the type of thing that I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is that we get kind of taken down a notch when we're in pain, and it has a weird way of humbling us. And I think being humble like this is a good thing. Being humble sometimes has a bad connotation associated with it, like being too passive or too insecure. But I think humble people are just the opposite of that. They're confident enough in themselves that they let their actions speak for themselves. Humble people know their self-worth. They don't feel the need to brag and boast about how great they are, like their more prideful counterparts might do. Being humble doesn't mean that these people think less of themselves. Instead, it means that they think of themselves less. Humility tends to come with enhanced situational awareness, where you might focus your attention on other people or other things to learn more about what's going on. You're not constantly focused inward on yourself. You're paying attention to the people around you and what they're going through, what they're saying. As a result, humble people tend to listen more than they speak. We've all been in a conversation where you can tell the other person that you're talking to just isn't listening. They seem to just be waiting for you to either take a breath or have a pause in what you're saying so that they can just inject whatever that it is that they have on their mind. Now, why do they do this? In my opinion, I believe that they believe what they have to say is more important or more valuable than whatever it is that you have to say. Now, a more humble person is not going to act this way. They're listening to what other people have to say before speaking. They're collecting all the information. They're trying to see the full picture. They realize that what's going on in their own head is not everything. They try to understand other people's perspectives without talking over people. You can't learn from other people when you don't give them the opportunity to speak. A humble person realizes that there's more to learn from others than what's going on in their own brain. In a way, being in pain pushes us to rely on others in ways that we maybe wouldn't otherwise rely on them. Imagine you have this big, prideful personality. You're on top of the world, and you make sure that everyone knows about it. And then all of a sudden, you come walking into work on crutches. Maybe you broke your leg or sprained your ankle or something like that. It takes the wind out of your sail a bit, doesn't it? You're no longer this big, indestructible, perfect person that you might have previously made yourself out to be. You're now probably relying on somebody else to help carry things into your office for you, from your car to the office, or to bring you a cup of coffee because you can't carry that while walking on crutches all at the same time. After the loss of a loved one, we might realize that, yeah, I kind of need that shoulder to cry on or that person to talk to. Pain makes us realize that we can't carry these burdens all on our own. And it humbles us in that way. Pain and suffering causes us to sort of shape our own belief systems. When something bad happens to us, or maybe even to somebody that we know, we may question, why do bad things happen to good people? A more religious person might question, why would God allow something like this to happen? But on the other hand, we might forge a different perspective from the same experience. We might instead ask, what good can come from this bad situation? Or the religious person could ask, how could God use this situation for good? I haven't really talked about this on the podcast before, but my brother was killed in action in Afghanistan in 2010. Now, I don't want to get too much into the details of what happened right now, but I will talk about this more in a later episode on this podcast. But I do remember on the night that he was killed, I was taking a shower after a mission that I was on when he was killed. So I was alone in the shower, kind of by myself, having for the first time the chance to kind of reflect on what had gone on that day. And I found myself verbally asking God why he would take my brother at the age of 25. Why would he take my brother so soon? My brother was going to get married when he got home. In my mind, he had his whole life ahead of him. He was my baby brother. I grew up protecting him. In a way, I felt like I failed. And I was, for a moment, I was kind of angry at God for it, for allowing me to fail. But then I realized that I couldn't blame God for this. I couldn't blame myself for this either. Maybe this was God's way of doing something bigger and better. Maybe my brother's death is God's way of causing other people to do good in ways that they previously might not have done. I don't know for sure if that's what God's plan was with this. I'll never know. But I do believe that everything does happen for a reason. We may not ever know what those reasons are. They may be beyond our own ability to understand. But I do believe that there's a reason. And I believe that the reason is always a good one, no matter how bad that current situation may seem, no matter how much it might sting in the moment when you're going through that pain. There's always something bigger and better on the other side if you allow yourself to get there. This leads me to my next point. The testing of somebody's resolve produces perseverance. Now, there was a time when I was in basic training, and we went on this run. Most of the runs that we went on, we knew the distance that we were going to run ahead of time. But for some reason, we didn't know for this one particular run. It was sort of odd, but we just sort of went with it. We started out and we went a few miles out, and then we turned around and started heading back the way we came. Now, this was early enough on in basic training that we had some guys who were sucking pretty bad at this point. In their heads, that point where we turned around was the halfway point. That was halfway done, we're now working our way back to being done. And by the time we got back to our barracks where we had started, they were spent physically and mentally. Their legs were sore, their lungs were on fire, but mentally, I think more importantly, mentally they were spent. To them, the barracks represented the finish line. Like, that was it. As long as I can get back to the barracks, I'm done. I don't have to keep going through this pain of this run anymore. So they were spent. But they kept going to that imaginary finish line, that finish line that nobody told them was a finish line. It was just in their heads that this is where we're going to end. Because every other run we've done before then had ended at the barracks. And so why wouldn't you assume that that's going to be the finish line this time? The problem, though, was that it wasn't the finish line for this run. We kept going right past the barracks. And as soon as the realization set in that that wasn't the finish line, a lot of those guys fell out and quit the run. They couldn't bring themselves to go even one step further. Now, of course, their muscles could have brought them one step further, but their minds quit on them. Now, all of us assumed that the barracks was going to be the finish line. And I won't lie, it was a bit of a mind game for me too. And that's, I think, why it sort of sticks out in my head a little bit when I think about it all these years later. But for those of us who stuck with the run, we developed a bit of perseverance. We drove through the pain, that the physical pain from the run, where our legs were burning and our feet were hurting and all that stuff. But also the mental pain, I think more importantly, the mental pain from that unknown variable of how long this run was going to last. And it made us just that much better for it. Now, throughout basic training and throughout your military career, there's these little things that happen that build perseverance. A lot of times in basic training, there are things that the drill sergeants will do and it just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Like, why am I doing these stupid, ridiculous exercises? Why am I filling things up just to dump them out? Why am I doing these things over and over and over again? Why am I going on a run past that finish line? Why am I doing all of these things? Sometimes it just doesn't make sense. But all of those little things build perseverance within you. And by flexing this perseverance muscle, it developed our character or our personality a little bit. It made us go from the type of person who was calculating how long the run was going to be based on a halfway point, an arbitrary made-up halfway point, to the type of person who just doesn't quit until the run or the job is done. As a soldier, this never-quit attitude is really important, especially when missions change at a moment's notice. A short meeting with a local village elder could turn into an ambush that leaves you stranded without support for way longer than you originally anticipated. You can't just quit in the middle of a firefight because you were expecting to be on base already. By building up that perseverance over all those little seemingly ridiculous things that you had to do in basic training and in other Army schools or other exercises, field exercises and things like that you do, it builds that perseverance so that when the time comes, you don't quit mentally. Physically, our bodies can do a lot. Our bodies can go through a lot of pain, withstand a lot of torture. But mentally it's a different story sometimes. The pain and suffering that we go through mentally can be something that we just can't handle. The pain and suffering that we go through helps bring clarity to a situation. It helps to give us direction to see what's really important. But all of that is a decision that we have to make. We have to decide whether to turn bitter in this situation or to make things better. When my brother was killed, I could have become a very angry and bitter person. And to be honest, I did become that person for a little while. I went down that path where I was angry at the situation. I held some resentment towards the Afghan people Why couldn't they clean up their own mess? Why did my brother have to be there cleaning up their mess? Why did he have to die? Why couldn't one of them have taken his place? So I did become that person for a while. But eventually I realized that no amount of anger, or no amount of hatred that I had towards any one person or group of people would bring him back. None of that would bring him back. I realized that I could mask the pain that I had by getting drunk every night. But I'd wake up the next morning and he'd still be dead. It wouldn't change anything. The only difference is I'd have a big-ass headache in the morning. So instead of being angry, being bitter, I sought counseling. I talked through the anger and the bitterness that I was experiencing, that I had brewing inside of me. Eventually, I was able to learn how to make things better. Now, I've heard a lot of people over the years, both veterans and civilians, who've tried to go to counseling and stop for one reason or another. They go to counseling for maybe it's something that they experienced during the war, or maybe it's some tragedy that they experienced at home, an accident, a tragedy from a car accident, or maybe they were attacked and mugged or something like that. And they go to counseling for one of these things. And they'll say that this counseling just didn't work for me. And a lot of times, though, I feel like it might not be that the counseling itself won't work for them, but maybe just the individual counselor that they saw, maybe wasn't the right person for them. Maybe they're not trained as a grief counselor or in PTSD issues or whatever their situation might be. Or maybe they are trained in those categories or those backgrounds or specialties, whatever you want to call it. Maybe they are trained in those, but maybe they're just not good. I know I've been the victim of a bad haircut from time to time, but it doesn't mean that I quit going to the barbershop or cutting my hair altogether. I just stopped going to that one particular barber until I found somebody who can cut my hair well. It's the same thing with counselors or therapists or psychologists or whoever you happen to be seeing. We also live in a, what I like to call, an on-demand society. We want our movies in our living room on Netflix right now. As soon as we click play, we want that movie to start showing. We don't want to drive to Blockbuster to rent a movie. We don't want to wait any length of time. We want it now. We want our online purchases delivered the same day or the next day at the very latest. We want to know what's going on in the news just seconds after the story happens, instead of waiting for the 10 o'clock news to break the story. In a similar way, we want our emotional or our physical pain to stop immediately after we start seeking help. But unfortunately, it just doesn't work that way. If you go to seek help for mental health issues, you have to give it time. Your brain is a complicated beast. Now, if you say, oh, I'm not going to give it time, this should be working already. Think about it this way. What if you broke your arm? You go to the doctor, they put a cast on your arm. 2 days later, you rip the cast off because your arm's still not healed. This thing's stupid. It's not working for me. It's never going to work. I've given it 2 days. It should have worked by now. That doesn't make any sense, right? Because we all know that it can take weeks for a bone to set properly. And the doctor would probably even tell you that much. You're going to need to keep this cast on for a couple weeks until your bone properly sets. So if you're seeking help for an emotional pain, give it time. Give it that same time that you would give to the physical pain. Each type of pain is going to require different lengths of time. So I can't say give it 2 weeks, give it 2 months, give it a year. I can't say how long it's going to take for whatever pain or suffering you're going through to be healed. And maybe it'll never be fully healed. I can't say that I'm fully over the fact that my brother is no longer with me. I hate the fact that he's not here. I would love to wake up tomorrow morning and have him standing on my front doorstep to give him a big hug. I would love that. But I know in reality that's never going to happen. And to think that it will is a little bit ridiculous. And so this has been years. This has been almost 9 years now since he's been gone. It doesn't make sense for me to think that that pain is ever going to just fully go away. But I've learned to find the good in that pain. And I've learned to become better because of it. Because of seeking the help that I saw. And I saw a counselor for nearly 2 years to get help with the issues that I was experiencing. It wasn't always easy. And it wasn't always fun to talk through these issues. But I'm a heck of a lot better off now than I was before.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.